Welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pebre, and Marielle Smith. Join us as we dive beyond the surface of our writing practice. Hi, Marielle.
Hey, Lou.
We're here again.
Yes, and we're still talking about self-sabotage.
We are, but we're talking about a very specific part of self-sabotage, aren't we?
Yes, but before we start, I have to ask, have you been self-sabotaging yourself this week? Not self-sabotage yourself. Have you been self-sabotaging this week? Linguistics.
A little. I have done it a little. Now you're putting me on the spot. Yes.
Always.
I've done a little bit of avoidance. And I definitely have newsletter on my list of goals for this week, as well as a social media post. And I have done neither at the moment.
Well, it's only Thursday as we record this, so that's okay.
yes, that's true.
That's true.
Yeah. So, yes, I have done a little bit of sabotaging, but not massively. But you know, because I've just finished a novel, I'm a little bit. There's part of me that's like, you deserve a break.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have that, but I know people who have that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm not on a break. I haven't not done anything or stayed away from writing, but I've got a little casual about it. So, you know, I might only have done 30 minutes this morning and thought, well, you know, you've just finished a novel.
I think that's okay.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
So now you finished that book, because I'm not in the loop. What are you working on right now?
Oh, planning the second. So I've been going through the first one to pick out, you know, the bits that need tying up or need expanding on. So, yeah, the bits that I've forgotten about. So as I've written it, I've kind of, and I think half of it's your subconscious taking you somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
But when I've read back through it, I'm like, oh, yes, there's that bit, and you could make more out of that and that. So that's what I've been doing.
Okay. Well, yeah, you know, that's my happy place.
Yes, the planning.
Because that's where it all comes together.
Yeah, yeah. I love the coming together bit. I do really enjoy that bit, because it does feel like there's something divine involved in what you're doing.
Yeah.
The plan, as you know, planning's my least favorite aspect.
I know.
So what about you?
I think my self-sabotaging would be not getting up straight away when my alarm goes off. So I'm also writing anywhere between 30 and 45 minutes in the morning, just because it's still darkish out when I get up and it's cold.
Yeah.
So I really don't want to leave my bed. But I am. And there's like lots of things that are pulling me away from writing, because I have this research that I understand I need to do to better build my world, or to finish world building, because, you know, I haven't actually ever fully thought through how my work functions in relation to this world, and that's kind of sort of bit me in the arse. And I have this new project that's kind of wanting, like, it's kind of pulling at me. So I'm actually quite impressed, that because I am trying to tell myself, oh, you can take the morning hour to just read in this book that I'm now reading, this research. But I'm not. So I'm in the morning, I open Scrivener, and I'm usually looking at like revisiting scenes and rewriting. And sometimes I take the research that I've done before and start matching it to, so in another, like in another, like, I don't know if any listeners have Scrivener, but I have like these, I have folders, which like with background information.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plot points that I need to work out and stuff like that. So I will start thinking, okay, so if that happened then this, oh, I could link that there, and this chapter I could make a reference to it. That's the kind of stuff. So as long as I'm doing that, I'm quite glad that I'm still doing that, and that I haven't, because it's easy, because wouldn't it be so much easier if I just took that research book that I'm reading right now, his history book, and just, you know, in the morning just stayed in bed under the covers with that book. But I'm not.
Yeah, and I think that's the aspect probably another aspect that I'm not keen on, the research. I think it is because it feels like it's dragging me away from writing.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of research. That's the thing. I like research. Okay, so you know this quote that's something. It goes something like, the best feeling is just having written. Yeah. So it's not going to write. It's not the writing, but it's like when you've just written, that's when you feel your best. And I think I have the same with the research. Like when I have been doing research and it is coming together.
Yeah.
Then I'm glad I've done the work. But when I'm doing the work, I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just takes so long as well.
Yeah. And I am realizing now that, and this is, I think, something we will talk about in relation to what we've planned for today, is that the way that I am writing, so the particular thing that I'm bringing to my work, kind of sets me up for a lot of actual research. Like I'm not building a world out of nothing, so everything goes as long as I can make it work in my head. Like I can make up the rules. No, I'm working within existing rules.
Okay.
Yes. And yeah. I'm just realizing that is why it's such a slow process, and why it's such a, I need to match all these things.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I am, it's not as much as I want, but I am in the morning, I'm focusing on the actual writing. And then if I want to dig into some other work, I can do that if I have time anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Thank you.
Well done. So we've got a question, haven't we? Should I explain what we're doing?
Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
So we are taking one of the prompts out of which one? Which book?
At the first volume of 52 Weeks of Writing.
Okay. And we are going to do it not so live, but sort of live, and talk about what it brings up for us.
Yes, because for me, so it's based on, there's a quote from an author, and then there's a prompt, and I wanted to do this one specifically because this is something that I see it with my clients, but I also see it like pop up in Facebook groups, this idea that you have this idea for a book, but somebody else has already written something like it. So should you now finish your story or not? And I see a lot of panic sometimes around that, or people, or they are reading something and they realize that looks so much like the thing they just blotted out.
Yeah.
And then they completely freak out and they're like, did I waste my time? What do I do? So I specifically wanted to talk about that. And this quote and this prompt speak to that.
Yeah. So,
Shall I share the prompt?
Yeah. Remind me which one we're doing.
Yes. So this one, if for those who have 52 weeks of writing volume one, because you have volume two, I think, the purple one. Yeah, yeah. So this is the green one. The prompt is week two, actually. So only the second week. And it's a quote. So the quote it's connected to is by Asha Dornfest. The quote goes like this. I think new writers are too worried that it has all been said before. Sure it has, but not by you.
Mm-hmm.
And especially since, and it's also like, I think it was 2 weeks ago that somebody had that moment that I saw it in a Facebook group, like this complete panic attack of I've spent so much time on this project and I was talking to this other author and it sounds like they had the same idea.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about that because I don't know about you, but I've also had these moments.
Yes. Yes. I've written Star Wars. Not really, but elements.
Yeah.
Subconsciously, yeah. Again, you're drawing on your experiences, aren't you?
Yes. It's like I write young adult fantasy fiction. And one of the reasons I struggle to make this first novel work is because when I first wrote it, it was completely pantsed. And I also wrote large chunks of it as I was reading through Harry Potter.
Mm.
So you see that even the tone, like I think because I'm now on like I'm so many drafts beyond, but initially when I first started taking the project seriously and started looking what I had, is that some parts sounded so not like me. And then some of the first drafts I wrote, like scenes and chapters I wrote while I was reading Cassandra Clare's work, the Shadowhunter series.
Yeah.
And then that is sort of, you hear the other author. Yeah. So you start thinking, I'm just copying this other person.
I haven't had that, but I have had, so the first novel I ever wrote, which no one has read, but it had elements of it that were, so the protagonist was quite passive, female and quite passive. And, you know, those sort of elements that I really didn't like. And I hadn't intended that to be the case. But you've kind of got to find your voice. And that, I hate that though. I hate that when people say you've got to find your voice because it doesn't define anything, does it?
No, but it doesn't make it less true. Like it's very vague, yeah. But it's, and I also think that voice is not static.
Yes. Yeah, but your voice, and I feel like we're going off topic, but your voice is made up of your values and who you are.
Yes. And your influences, like your cultural baggage. So it is made up of everything you've read and seen.
But it's who you want to be, isn't it? Or what you want to do. And I think it's really important to kind of do what we're doing here and reflect on who you are and what you want in order to be able to know when you've found your voice or know what you want or when you're missing the mark.
Yes. And you said you were afraid that we were going to go off topic, but I think that actually ties in really well because if you know all of this, then you also know what makes your voice, your storytelling different from other people. So how about I share the prompt that goes with this quote, and then we're just going to talk about moments that we had that and also what we think makes our work us.
Yeah.
So this is the prompt from the book. So we're not going to do that. Like it says about like set your timer. We're not going to do that. But if you do want to do it at home, we will be including the prompt in the show notes. Because I do think it's a really good exercise, especially if you're struggling with things like imposter syndrome. So this is the quote. Here it goes. Think of a story you are currently working on or want to be working on. In what way is it similar to other stories? In what way is your story different? Grab a notebook or open a new document on your computer and set your timer to 15 minutes. For the next quarter of an hour, try to answer the following. What are you bringing to the table? What voice, perspective, knowledge, angle? What makes your story your story?
Yeah.
And I like I said, like, I do think, like, I see this struggle so often. So that's why I said, like, it is a really good exercise to do, because it makes you reflect on where the similarities are and where the differences are. Because I think the fact is that nobody is original, not entirely original. We all build on each other's work. So you can bring in original elements.
I'm thinking of a program that I watched on, well, it was on Marianne Keyes, the author, and mm-hmm. They were like interviewing her, but they were also showing aspects of her life in kind of a, you know, they've got someone else acting out aspects of her life and incorporating parts of her novels, you know, so someone mm-hmm. reading parts of her novels in that. And it was all about a voice, actually. It was all about what made her novels unique and what people were drawn to in it.
Yeah.
And that was quite interesting.
But that is the thing, I think. And I think, because I remember, like, it's funny that you bring up Marianne Keyes, because I, when I first started taking my writing seriously, I was swapping chapters with a friend of mine. And she struggled a lot with the fact that she read a lot of Marianne Keyes books. And even though she knew that it was like very, it's like a formula.
Mm.
But she couldn't stop reading, and that really frustrated her.
Yeah.
Because she's like, I know these books just work for a particular reason.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be that kind of person who sort of like, you know, just devours books like these. And yet there is something about her. I'll be honest, I've never read anything by her. But she was kind of frustrated because she's like, I can see the formula in the book. Yeah. Like, I understand, as a writer, I can see it. Yet I love reading her work.
Yeah. So Marcus is a big fan. and I've listened to, I think we had an audio book when we went to Scotland. So, yeah, it's not the sort of thing that I'd particularly be drawn to. But she's got a very unique voice. It's got that level of tragedy and humour, and manages to play off against each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's the thing. And I think for my friend, the struggle was, is that I think we all kind of hope that we are going to write something truly original.
Mm.
And, but maybe that she cannot leave Marianne Keyes' books alone. Maybe that is proof that original can be, like I said before, like it can be a small element. Like it doesn't have to be the whole concept.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's what makes a book like authentic, or that makes you go, like when you read it, you're just like, I bet this is this author. Because it feels like this particular author.
So it does give you a level of confidence to know who you are. It's because you've got to write from who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
In order to be unique.
Yes. And the thing is, of course, like, I think we are all unique and we all have a unique perspective, right? Because we're all unique individuals. At the same time, the reason storytelling works is because a lot of perspectives are also shared, because otherwise we cannot connect with each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is also why story has to work in a particular way, because that's how we understand. Like everybody who writes and everybody who reads will understand. Not everybody will know why a story is not working, but you will know when you're reading, this is not working.
Yeah, yeah.
So all writing is basically, it has to follow a certain route.
Yeah. So you asked about, the question is to think about a story you're working on or a story that you're planning to work on. And I thought I'd pick not the stories that I write with Amy, although there are many qualities in those that is me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, but I thought I'd go with my fantasy series, which I've only released a novella in that, but I have written a novel, so I know the elements of it.
So what do you think? Like, how would you answer the question? What are you bringing to the table? What makes it you?
I'm bringing my experience, in particular of my working life. There's my personal life, obviously, but my working life is working with vulnerable people, and those people that somehow they go through the worst of circumstances and the worst experiences, but somehow they manage to survive, or even more than that, they manage to retain themselves and plow forward. And there's a real, I don't know how to describe it. It's I suppose, without wanting to sound too corny, it's that human spirit.
Mm-hmm.
That includes sacrifice, that includes, that's what I want to encompass. But also, I like the fantasy bit. And that's because, like you, I do feel that there is more to life than what we kind of see. Or sometimes we do feel that there's something else there. And that's what I'm wanting to talk about in novels, I suppose.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I want to pair it up with the gritty reality. That's what I want to do.
Yes, you want to make that connection.
Mm.
Yeah. I think the same goes, I think that is why for me, so I what I tend to do, and this is quite a recent realization, actually, is that, not entirely. Like the reason, like my magic system in my fantasy world is kind of like it's very important to me to create a system that's almost possible, because when I was reading Harry Potter, I got really annoyed by the fact that magic is kind of a given.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So in my world, first of all, you cannot do everything with magic. There are very specific rules to it. It's also not some people have it and some people don't. It's some people don't have it, but that's only because in the past they moved away from sort of that inherent nature. So I'm talking sort of like things like Industrial Revolution, stuff like that, when people started to move away from being closely connected to nature. So I kind of want to describe sort of what would have happened if we hadn't become so technical and digital.
So what's making you want to bring that element to it?
Because I think that's what I see in the real world as well.
Mm.
is that we have lost that connection to ourselves, but also to, because they say that, like, back in the day, we're all psychic, because our intuition was just that much stronger. So we were much more in tune with nature. So we knew how to use nature and natural resources to heal, to provide for ourselves, etc. And we kind of lost touch with that quite drastically, I would say, right now.
So that's what you're wanting to bring, this?
Yes, and even though I am also planning this, and this was the recent realization, because I'm also planning this cozy mystery. I'm not even in the planning phase yet. I'm just having sort of flashes of ideas. This cozy mystery series, and the protagonist will get herself into trouble and, like, on crime scenes, because she can communicate with animals. But not in a... So this is for me as well. So I'm reading books on animal communication and sort of like meditation sort of paranormal activity, because I don't want to write a book in which you have a protagonist who, by some freak accident, suddenly was able to speak to her animals or random animals because she got hit in the head or she had a car accident or whatever, and she's the only person.
I can help you with dogs.
There you go. No, but so this for me. So I'm exploring what we already can do. So I want to explore what might be, what either is already possible, plausible, or could be possible. That is kind of how I want to stretch my reality. So I don't want to sort of like superimpose this. Imagine we could do this.
Yeah.
So that for me, I do think that makes it harder for me, because that I need to puzzle much more.
So you start with an idea then.
It's almost a counter, because I remember, because the thing is with this fantasy series is that I pantsed it and I started writing it while I was, I think even before I started reading Harry Potter. So the initial drafts did have a lot of sort of, you know, all over the place magic, because that was, I was reading. And then at one point I realized that that was something that really annoyed me about the Harry Potter world. So it was, it's kind of a counter move.
Okay. I think the other thing for me is the characters. You know, having characters that are very real.
I don't know if my characters are real. We'll have to see about that.
I have this thing as well about, you know, having characters that are different. So they have a difference. I don't mean, I don't necessarily mean skin colour or, you know, sexuality or any of the obvious differences. I mean something that can be turned, that can be a negative, but can also be turned into a strength.
So is that more in terms of what they've experienced or the kinds of jobs they have, or?
Experience, maybe. I don't know. It could come from anywhere, but it's about, I think I'm trying to say something about the fact that in different circumstances, something that's a negative can be turned into a positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's value, I suppose, in that.
Well, that's your belief system, right? And that sort of like seeps into your pages. From that, what I assume immediately is that you don't think, and I know people are out there who do think like that, is that if certain people have gone through certain things in their lives, they're like doomed.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so like sexual abuse and particularly like children, you know, when they grow up, they believe that, or they can believe that there's something wrong with them. Yeah. Or they can't, or it makes that what they've been through can also make them unique in order yeah. to overcome situations.
So you would say that, so in your work, one of the things that's very particular about you is that you don't condemn your characters to their past.
Yes. Well, that we all have flaws, I suppose.
Yeah.
That can be a flaw, but can then also be a strength. I've got a thing about sacrifice as well, like self-sacrifice.
Yeah. And that for me, because I like writing like strong female characters for obvious reasons, I'd say. So self-sacrifice for me is always a bit of a tricky topic, because we know from literature, like the self-sacrificing mothers in like Irish literature, for example, right? So that is always like, how do you do it well?
Yeah. But also, it's about connection as well. So that romance, but it doesn't have to be romance. It can be friendship, or that's an important element as well. And I think all these things, like you've just said, come from your belief system and your experience. And it's, that's why it's kind of really important that you know what these things are, isn't it?
Yeah, because I think for all of us, like our values sort of like end up on the page, whether or not we're conscious of them. But I think if you are conscious of it, then you can actually use it and make it work in your favor. Like, because then it can become part of the sort of like your brand or whatever, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so you can really play with that.
You do read the same author. So I have authors that, you know, anything they put out, I'm going to read. Even if it's in a different genre or whatever, I'm going to read it because I know that they're going to give me the elements that I want.
Yeah, so if that is the element, if whatever they are doing differently is what makes you turn those pages, then you know you've got to stick with this.
Yeah. It's that emotional hook.
Yeah, and that for me, now you're saying that, I'm like, that's kind of sort of what hit me recently, is that it's not just my fantasy fiction in which I want to be as truthful to what could be possible, like what human beings could be capable of, like magic-wise. And I'm realizing that, you know, as I'm thinking and I'm having flashes of this cozy mystery series, I'm like, I'm doing the same thing. So yes. I don't think anybody will ever write a book by me, no matter what genre it is in which I suddenly make up this completely non-plausible magic system or paranormal world, because I'm very, I kind of want to write about things that we actually might still be able to do if we just sort of reconnect to that part of ourselves.
So
that makes sense.
Yes. And when I look back on that first novel that I wrote, I can, because I know what my values are and where I'm coming from, I can identify what was wrong with it.
Oh, yes. Because you said that, right? You were talking about this passive female character.
Yes.
And I think I told it before on this show as well, that I remember getting the critique that my protagonist was very passive. And since I knew the person who, like my beta reader, from like doing gender studies together in Dublin, that was an actual slap in the face. And she was like, you're a feminist. So that was, but I also think, and this is like what I said before, it is one of the reasons why like stories simply, stories are so similar often, is also because we do indeed rewrite what we know. And not, and I'm not saying that in terms of human experiences, because there's this quote that says something like, if we truly just only wrote what we know, we would, we maybe have one book and three poems in us and that's it, right? But what we know also means what we've written, what we've read. And I remember talking about this, I don't know if you, do you know the, God, what's the author's name? She wrote about the Grisha verse. It's the there's a Netflix show now. It's called Shadow and Bone.
I do know. And because you're putting me on the spot, I can't think of her name.
Okay. It sounds a bit Italian. That's what I remember. But she actually, we talked about this on the Doing Diversity in Writing podcast. She actually admits, because the Netflix show is much more diverse in terms of skin color and race, so race and ethnicity, than the original first couple of books. And she actually says is that I realized after writing those first couple of books is that I was writing according to what I know in the genre, and those are all books by white straight males. So in her later book, she tried to fix that. And I completely lost my point now.
I'm just...
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No. the passive female character. Because that is what... That is fastly changing, like rapidly changing right now, right? But I do think when I started writing that book, like, when I was in my teens, that was what I was reading everywhere. And it took me a long time and a fellow feminist having to slap me in the face
to see,
even though I was sort of redrafting the book, my character remained the sort of passive, everything is happening to me person. She's and I couldn't see it, because that's what we see a lot, or what I saw a lot. I think, like I said, it is changing right now, luckily.
She's called Lee Bardugo. Dugo?
That's it. Yeah.
It was going to
be. So for her as well, like her voice was very based on the stuff that she's read, right? And it developed as she realized this, or was made, I don't know if she realized herself, or was made aware of it like I was. And then she stepped away from what she knew and started to develop a world that she wanted to see.
I realized it myself, but it was by stepping away from the draft and coming back to it. And it's the way I set it up. So it was a setting that led to the character. She didn't have a chance to be active because of what I'd disabled her with, if you see what I mean.
What you'd done to her.
Exactly. So she never had that opportunity to be, you know, as dynamic as I wanted her to be. As I would be, I suppose, or hope I would, if I was a demon.
Lovely.
Yeah. So it was, but if I didn't know, if I didn't understand where I was coming from and where what I wanted to put out, I wouldn't have seen that.
No, you wouldn't have recognized that.
Hopefully someone would have pointed it out to me. I'm not sure they would, because there's plenty of books out there like that, but I think I would have been disappointed if I'd have put
but that's my point like but like my fantasy series has been I've had so many beta readers, like I do beta readers every draft, and one person said something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just, and that's not because the other ones are not feminists, right? Or like strong female characters, just they don't notice it, perhaps.
Yes, that's it. Because it's, yeah, but it doesn't necessarily align with your values, does it? When you actually see it.
Yeah, so now after that, I did a lot of rewriting for this particular character and also her love interest, because their dynamic was not healthy.
Oh, I had a... Yeah, in the series I've written with Amy, the love interest, trying to bring those two together didn't work very well. And so I really had to look at it in a different way. And it made it better for doing that. Because it was just different. Yeah. Because it was different. It wasn't a straightforward. So I think you do kind of have to have something to say.
Yeah, and I think that's my point. I think that is why this exercise is so interesting to do, because then you figure out what you do have to say. And I think this is something I wanted to talk about as well, because like I said, there's often this sort of initial panic when an idea sounds similar to what you are planning to write, or what you are writing, or just have, you know, type the end on. And I don't think there's anything worse than typing the end and then reading a novel or hearing about a novel that sounds kind of similar. But I think it's important to know that there are all these aspects, like its voice, its setting. Because so I was talking to a writer friend of mine, and she just posted in some group that she was working on this new series with her co-writer. It was a cozy mystery series. So I was like, amazing, same here. You need to tell me all about this. So she messaged me just privately in Messenger. So it was like a female protagonist, but that's a cozy mystery. It's most often female protagonist, if not always. So she started, you know, mentioning some things, and then she said, and she talks to cats.
Oh, I see.
So my protagonist can communicate with animals. So I just read that part. So my brain went, no. But because I've done exercises like this before, and I'm quite self-aware, luckily my ego stepped away quite quickly. And I simply went, okay, so first of all, they are situated in the US and their books will be placed in St. Louis, I think. My books will be set here in Cyprus.
But your character will be totally different as well.
Also that, like, they are going to write a detective.
Yeah.
Right? So somebody who actively uses her ability to speak to cats to solve mysteries. I am going to have a protagonist who is very reluctant about this gift that she has, and I'm gonna take a few books before she finally accepts it and starts using it. And then still she's not going to be a detective.
Yeah.
But I often see, so when I do read these stories, like, I just read this novel, but now I saw this blurb, and do I finish my book?
Oh, yeah. Like,
there are so many elements in there. And even if all the elements are the same, like even if she had said, well, you know, we have this character and she's working at this, because I'm going to create this like little cafe that's also a bookshop. That's where my character works, because that's like, I would love to have one of those, right? So I'm just going to, that's like my ideal setting.
Yeah.
And she said, surprise, we're going to set it in Larnaca in Cyprus. So cool. Even, but like, that's not, I don't think that would happen. But even if they had the same idea, it would be a completely different book just from what they bring in, what I bring in.
Yeah.
But it's, for me, it's just the panic, this little moment of panic was, and she talks to her cats.
Yes, yes, because it's quite unique. But then you have just told everyone about that now.
Yes, but the thing is also, in cozy mystery, it's actually very normal. There are even cozy mysteries, like a whole subgenre that's with animals.
Yes.
So it's not like that my character can communicate with animals is not unique. That their detective can speak to her cat, it's not unique.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but what makes it unique is how you then bring all those elements together.
Yeah. So,
like how we, yeah.
So chill.
But that's the good thing is that it took me about 30 seconds to go to respond. That is insane. My protagonist can talk to animals as well. And then she was like, oh, awesome.
Yeah.
But that is, I think, two writers who've been writing for a while who understand.
Yeah.
But just to say that. That does, because I think the ego just kicks in with this. My idea wasn't unique. And I mean.
Yeah, what idea is unique? Yeah.
Yeah, which idea is actually. But that's my point, I think, that how you bring all these elements together.
Yeah.
That is what's going to make it. Yeah, make it a very particular experience. And hopefully that will be what, like you said, like if a writer hits a particular point for you, then you will just pick up everything they read, just because for some reason there's just something about what they do or what they write about or the characters they create or how they bring a setting to life. That's why you keep, you know, buying their work.
Yes. Yes, and you know what you're getting as well.
Yes, yeah. And that's, I actually had this discussion, so I'm glad you mentioned that before, that it doesn't, at one point, it stops being important what genre it really is. If you really like this particular thing about this author and they bring this about, no matter what they write. I had this coaching client once who was very struggling with her brand, because even though the setting was often the same, she was both writing thrillers and romance. And she felt like she had to choose. So, because how do you sell? How do you sell? Well, this is a romance novel, and now I have this thriller novel out, and now I have a romance novel again. So, at the end, we sort of like what we were able to distill is that what her thing is that it's set in a very particular setting, so in a very particular country. And all of her novels are MM fiction. So even if it's a thriller, there will be a gay romance thread somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're all set in the same kind of setting. So I'm like, instead of selling yourself as a romance author or a thriller author, you can sell yourself as, I always write in this particular country, so this particular culture, and all my books are MM. And then once, if people just love how you write and what you do with those characters and what you come up with, some might have a preference for the thriller aspect, some might have a preference for where it's just pure romance. But if they just love that kind of setting and MM fiction, then you're done.
Yeah, yeah.
They will just come back to you because that is what you write. And sometimes that's this genre, sometimes that is this genre.
So. Are we going to leave everyone to do their own exercise?
Yeah, I would. I really do. If this is something you struggle with, and if you feel, or even if you're not struggling with this, I think this level of self-awareness of what is you, what makes you you in your writing, can be really good. The funny thing is, if you know these kind of things, let's say you are querying, right? You want to do the traditional published route. Knowing these things means you can put this in your query letter. And if you are self-publishing, knowing these things, that this is what sets you apart, means that you can put these things in your blurb a sort of like point so that people know, okay, so this is about this.
Yeah.
Because then that is what you will be known for. So it's always good to know what makes your work specifically you.
Yeah. And so you can spot it as well when things don't go to plan.
Yes. And it's also, it's often in those little things, right? Like if you say, my thing is riding dragons, I'm like, yeah, that's a thing for a lot of authors. So that's definitely not what makes you unique. But maybe how your dragon, like, for example, I know an author, and in her work, the dragon is actually becomes like this really funny side character, was an ally of the protagonist, even though the protagonist sets out to slay the dragon because the country thinks the dragon is a threat. The dragon is actually, the actual threat is the city, the government, the king, so she kind of turned, the author kind of turns that on its head.
Yeah.
So what makes her work is not that she adds a dragon, but what makes her work hers is that she is sort of twisting those expectations that we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does.
I just thought of that because I thought of dragons.
Okay, then.
Do you have dragons? Do you have dragons in your work?
I've thought about having dragons because they are something that I could feel passionate about. But no dragons yet.
No. Me neither, unless somebody can point me towards a research that dragons existed so I can sort of slip them in as a realistic thing.
I'm not ruling dragons out.
For you or for this world?
For both. For both.
Okay. If anybody has actual research on whether or not dragons exist, let me know so maybe I can slip them in.
Okay, then. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yes. And don't forget, we're going to put the quote and the writing prompt in the show notes so you can do the exercise yourself.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit our website at divingintowriting.com. We'd love to hear from you, and if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Bye for now.